Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Mercury retrograde, not the name of a cool as hell Pacific Rim fighting robot, but the name of the smell in Alice's room.
I've revealed to Nate that I've become a scented candles girly, and Nate is appalled. Let me just count how
I'm
many.
I'm bullying her because I'm jealous.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. There are 11 on my desk of different scents currently.
But that's like a stench orchestra. Do you expect to get some kind of nasal harmony?
I've not lit them all. I'm not a maniac. They're not all going at once.
But have you tried like scented candle alchemy, where you light multiple ones at the same time and see if you can combine them into an acceptable smell?
Yes. Like a Gatling gun for the sinuses.
They're expensive though. I'd be burning quite a lot of money if I burned two at once, you know.
Are these Yankee candles?
No, jeez. They're all like different from different places. I've been trying out different ones. And they're from like independent sellers, so they're all called Mercury Retrograde, Starry Night, Hug in a Jar. Hug in a Jar is very nice, actually. It's vanilla.
Big Grosler.
Yeah.
What would Big Grosler smell of?
Like roasting meat and like oil.
Preservatives.
You should do like some orc themed scented candles, Nate. Welcome, listener, to this Season 3, Episode 6 of the Electronic Wireless Show podcast. I'm reasonably sure it's Episode 6. I don't know why every week I'm like, I don't know how long we've been doing this.
The small numbers are the toughest. They're scrappy.
I know, yeah. Scrappy. This is Rock, Paper, Shotgun's PC Gaming Podcast, and the only podcast you need, in my opinion, which is that of Alice Bell. And I'm joined this week by James Archer. Hello, James.
Hello.
And Nate Crowley. Hello, Nate.
AKA the Grosler.
Oh, no. It's another persona for you.
Well, that's as far as that one's got, so you're probably safe for now. Good morning.
Morning. What's that movie where Magneto has got loads... Not Magneto. It's young Professor X has got loads of personalities and he goes beast mode. Is that you?
Oh, Split.
Yeah.
What is that in the X-Men canon, or are you talking about James McAvoy?
Yeah, no, that'd be good if it was James McAvoy talking to himself for like 2 hours, and he does different voices when he's being like a lady and a child and stuff. It's a ridiculous movie. And then like because he works in a zoo or something, he's like internalized all the beasts in the zoo, so he goes literal beast mode. Yeah, and that's like a personality that's like all of the animals or something.
Is this the gritty reboot of Honey, We Bought a Zoo? Is that even a film? That is a film, right?
Yes, we bought a zoo.
Oh, I'm thinking of Honey, I Shrunk the Kids.
Honey, I Shrunk the Zoo.
Honey, I Internalized the Zoo. And if that isn't a brilliant name for a magical realism anthology, I don't know what is.
No, I'm just thinking, honey, I have become deaf.
Such a shame that franchise didn't expand as far as it deserved.
Rick Moranis doing like a kind of mugging horror look just past the top of the camera with a big mushroom cloud behind him. I mean, that's still at the end of Little Shop of Horrors, isn't it? But, what are we talking about today? I can't even remember. Skull and Bones. Delays. Yeah. There you go. How's that for a segue, you fuckers?
Yo-ho. Release the goon. It's been in development for years.
It has been in development for years. Do you know how many years?
No, they didn't teach us that in the shanty.
Do you know how many years Skull and Bones has been in development, James?
Is it 9 or 10?
I think it's 9, yeah. Because if we look, well, I've got a tag page.
It started as a, I think it started as a Assassin's Creed, like, you know, which was it, yeah. Black Flag, like spin-off of that.
Mm. So it was 6 years ago it was revealed at, well, maybe a little bit more than 6 years ago. It was revealed and kind of trailered at E3 2017. So it's near 7 years now. And we can presume it was in development a little bit before it was revealed as well. So it's been kicking about a long old time. And I've played a version of it as well because it was playable for a short while. At I think it was Gamescom I played it at. I can't remember now. So long ago, lads. But it was... So Assassin's 3 came out. The only bit of Assassin's 3 people really liked was the sea combat, which he did a little bit of. And then there was Assassin's Creed Black Flag, which was mostly pirating. And so then they were going to make...
Was that
make
the game
it...
with the stealth ship sequence?
I think so, yeah.
Where you had to follow another ship through a swamp. On like usual, like following a bloke rules.
Yeah.
But it was just absolutely farcical because these massive tall ships.
Was there a moment where like the boat paused to like turn around because it was getting
suspicious? Yeah, exactly, mate. Yeah. It just always really tickled me. Hated the sequence.
That was delayed in 2018. Then in it wasn't always a live service game either. It was going to be like a game. So Skull and Bones in 2020, they were like, okay, it's going to be a live service thing because it was just going to be a sort of team ship fighting thing. And they've decided to make it a live service game in 2020 because everyone was like, live service, this is the way forward. I don't know if they anticipated how everyone would get live service fatigue so quickly. So then it was going to be coming out when, I don't know, they shit-canned the project lead on it in 2021. Then soon after that, it was delayed again. But allegedly now it's coming out.
And this is—it's sort of Sea of Thieves, but with reasonable human proportions. Is that the brief?
I think it's like lower, smaller scope than Sea of Thieves because it's not really like swashbuckling. It is mostly like boat driving. I think whenever you get off the boat, you can kind of like potter about a bit, but you can't. You can't get in like sword fights. You can't like move your character around on the ship, I don't think.
Okay. So it's less granular,
I guess.
Yeah, you play the ship. I think.
Occasionally, the ship will send out like a humanoid representation of itself onto land to buy food for the ship, because the ship has a stamina bar that needs to be refilled.
Yeah.
Now this is selling it to me.
I'd love if the ship could get like scurvy, but
that sounds like a really compelling like SCP, like a living pirate ship where all the pirates are just like pseudopods.
I read some Clive Barker for the first time. I read one of his books of blood, and there's a story in it that's really good about these guys that like go on holiday to Italy and they just go into the hills in the countryside and they come across these like two sort of neighboring large towns who like every like decade or so they all the people in the town form into huge like humanoid mechs, like
whoa,
like sort of like, you know how ants make bridges across water? They do that, but they become like giant people, like Attack on Titan style mechs. So like the eyes are made up of like people bunched together, and like the strongest lads are at the bottom because they got to hold the weight up, and they make, you know, all the sinews and everything to make a person walk, and then
that
they have a big fight. Yeah, it's good.
And these are just two Italian towns.
Yeah, and then there's it's about the tragedy of it because one of them like weakens and falls, and yeah, it's great. And the other one sort of goes off its rocker collectively. It's good.
Ties in really nicely with like Italian Renaissance political philosophy as well, about like the body politic. And got Clive Barker, wow. You clever bastard.
Anyway. Skull and Bones is now in open beta, and it's launching next week or the end of this week. I forget. I should have prepared this, but yeah, Alice I wrote about it, saying continuing their great prank of pretending they plan to release Skull and Bones, Ubisoft today launched an open beta for their multiplayer open world pirate boat game. The free beta will run until Sunday night, so it's just closed up the open beta, and then it will be coming out. So
you know what else is coming out?
What?
In an hour and a half. Bloody Deep Rock Galactic Survivor. Early access. What James has reviewed.
Yeah. Hell yeah. I was going to talk about that later. But
Yeah.
No, I just, it's burst out of my kidneys early. Sorry, I'll pop it back.
Is do you store video game excitement with your piss?
Yes. Right. Yeah. I'm an advanced mutant.
Yeah. Although no, pee is stored in the bladder, isn't it? Kidneys is just like meat.
Oh, the old ways.
Anyway, Skull and Bones is coming out. Well, tomorrow, as you listen to this, reader, on the 16th, which is a Friday. And there's still time for it to be delayed again. Delays, obviously, not uncommon. In the past week, we also got news that Homeworld 3 has been delayed until May to incorporate player feedback. Edwin, our news editor, wrote about it and subsequently felt guilty because he complained a little bit about its controls, and he said, naturally and self-flatteringly, I am now petrified that I am single-handedly responsible for the delay. Please come back, Homeworld 3. I didn't mean it. Although he was not alone. Many players also had some reservations about the controls and the UI. So that's been delayed a little bit.
Have either of you two played much in the Homeworld oeuvre?
No, that's sort of your world, isn't it?
It is. It's one of my weird blind spots, because I always fancied the original, and Deserts of Karak as well was one of theirs, wasn't it? Was that Homeworld 2? Or was it a spin-off? The one with the big, like, the one that was like Dune, basically.
I don't know.
Well, either way, it looked wicked, and I never got round to playing it. It might be a nice thing to do. Now, who am I kidding? I'm going to be playing Deep Rock.
We also got a last minute delay in the last few weeks. So part Divinity, part Persona RPG, The Thaumaturge, getting 2 week delay, which is a very little little delay. So that's coming out the start of March now. It was originally due to land in December. They pushed it to February the 20th, and now they've just pushed it a little bit again. They've kicked the can a tiny bit down the road.
Can he say fairer than that? 2 weeks?
No, yeah.
Reasonable thing to announce.
They've said in this case they want to give it space so it can be enjoyed the way we believe it deserves. Maybe it feels as though too many other big things coming out. And then we've got the Elden Ring DLC, which is happening, but, you know...
Is that its first DLC?
Yeah, major DLC said to be in the works as From Software look to support the game in the medium to long term. It's called Shadow of the Erdtree. And there were rumors that it was coming out this month. But now, you know, they've not really said anything and they're just sort of, yeah. So delays, not uncommon at all. Continually like announcing a game is about to come out and then delaying it and then sort of reworking it and then revealing it again and then delaying it again. Much more uncommon, I would say. I mean, James, can you remember anything comparable to the Skull and Bones process?
I mean, definitely not. Although Skull and Bones is a very unique example in terms of like why it hasn't just been canned. Because, so a few years ago, there's a Kotaku report that cited, I think, developers on Skull and Bones. It's apparently because of a deal Ubisoft made with the Singaporean government, in which they get some supposedly quite generous subsidies in exchange for, one, hiring a certain number of people at Ubisoft Singapore, and two, actually shipping a major game within a certain amount of years. So they are, in fact, legally obligated to release Skull and Bones.
That sounds like a load of bull and scones to me.
Or else they'd be in trouble with the Republic of Singapore.
But, like, how many years is within a certain number of years? Because, like, they're surely butting on the upper limit of that at this stage. Like, and why, if it's the case that they have to put it out, and Eve, by the way, has referred to it as, like, a quadruple A game, which is clearly stretches credulity, and he tries that every so often. He likes bringing out the fourth A sometimes.
Don't make me bring out the fourth A.
I will turn this A around. But if that's the case, why didn't they just bring it out one of the many times that they have had the chance to bring it out? Do you know?
Yeah, I don't know. Got a lot of leeway.
Do you know what's happened with the Wile E. Coyote film that is going to be shelved and deleted for tax reasons, for a tax write-off? Yeah. Has that happened with games yet?
I mean, yeah, well, I don't know specifically for like tax reasons, but with all the kind of enclosures and firings and stuff, like the Deus Ex game that was in development has been shit-canned. Last Texas has tweeted about it.
There's that Hyenas game as well that got cancelled recently that looks almost finished.
But it's not at least happening for tax reasons yet.
I don't know of any game that has been finished and ready to go and then been, you know, trashed. I haven't heard of that. It may well have happened. It might have been, because we might not have heard about the game, you know?
Yeah, yeah. I feel so bad for Wile E. Coyote.
I know, yeah. They were never good. Didn't they ask for like 75 million or something from Netflix?
Which is ridiculous. And it was a stupid like auction process as well, where they weren't taking second offers. Oh, grr.
Someone leak it. Someone has it.
Please.
Please, God. But yeah, so I played the original incarnation of Skull and Bones when it was like a kind of multiplayer, not a live service, but just like a, you know, having fun on the sea, exploding stuff. And it was basically just like the combat from Assassin's Creed 4, so there wasn't really a lot added on. Then I wrote up the kind of preview reveal-y business that they did a couple of years back. That was, I'll see if I can find it, because I'm having a vague memory now that maybe like they said we couldn't write it up because they were delaying. Oh no, I think I did write it up, but everyone said this looks absolute shit, lads, because the UI was the busiest thing that you've seen in your whole life. Yeah, a year ago. So I had a hands-off preview. There was a hands-off preview for press in summer 2022. So like a year and a half ago, basically, where they were like, it's out this November in 2022. and it looked so busy and so kind of, you know, just Sea of Thieves without any jokes and just so much going on that, and everyone said that, and then they just delayed it again. So like it has been so close to like coming out so many times, and if it is just for a legal obligation, just like kick it out then, like get it out the door, because there's so many man hours working on it, you know.
Yeah,
gruesome.
I don't know.
Edged by what pirates.
If you were legally obligated to make a game, what would you make right now?
What? How long have I got?
Apparently 10 years.
Will I be funded for the 10 years if I have to produce a game in 10 years and I'm like paid a living wage to do
yeah.
that?
Yeah. Yeah. What would you make?
James Grond, International Battering Ram of Misery.
Is it a heartbreaking visual novel from the point of view of the battering ram?
No, it's a sleazy early 90s point and click. Where you seduce socialites in the guise of Grond, the battering ram from Lord of the Rings.
I like the idea of like the cover art being like Grond, but in like a suit.
It's got like, horrible Leisure Suit Larry vibes, hasn't it?
But like the suit is kind of strapped round the huge bulk of the...
Just draped over the frame. All the ogres pushing him have got tuxes.
Speaking of huge bulk, by the way, this is not related to Skull and Bones, but the Deconstruct team did a tarot game called... I'm writing it up as my news post today. They did a tarot game called The Cosmic Wheel Sisterhood, which Edwin really liked and has written about on the website. And just in time for Valentine's Day, it now has an official dildo that you can win.
What, IRL?
Yeah, an IRL dildo. And it is, you'll pardon the pun, fucking massive. In the words of an Irish rugby coach talking to the French team that he coaches, say fucking enorm. Because it's themed around like the kind of, you know, giant cosmic deity that is in the game. But it's about, I would say, 2.5 Coke cans high.
That's a very difficult assignment, yeah.
And it's all purple and gold and stuff. But what a treat for Valentine's Day.
That's very auspicious and appropriate.
Yeah, and you'd think if, you know, an indie team can bring out a dildo in time for Valentine's Day, surely the combined might of Ubisoft could release a game. What would you make, James, if you had to make a game? You've got 10 years of noodling about.
Oh, wow. I'd just make a new Deus Ex game, and then I'd hire Elias Dufexis so he doesn't have to be sad on Twitter.
Oh, that's lovely.
That's a much more human answer than mine. Congrats.
Also, I'd be like the hero who saved Deus Ex.
Exactly. And I think both of those games have a great chance of getting massive funding on, for example, Kickstarter, but for very different reasons. So, good work. We'll move on for talking about games that are allegedly coming out to games that are out now already and that we've been playing. So James, we've trailed what you've been playing this week. Do you want to tell us about it?
Yeah, so I've played the early access build for Deep Rock Galactic Survivor, which is out now by the time
you want it, give it to us.
It's actually out in 1 hour and 2 minutes from the time of speaking. Nate is very excited, and he should be, because it's a great game. This is kind of like the, for those who don't know, this is kind of like a Vampire Survivors style auto shooter, bullet heaven, whatever you want to call it, based on Deep Rock Galactic. So you are a dwarf, a space dwarf. You get sent down into the mines of an alien planet to extract all its valuable resources and kill a load of giant arachnid bugs. And it's just really, really tightly designed. Like, as a spin-off, it works really well, because like an auto shooter is all about this kind of I don't know. Because the input is so simple, right? You literally just move around. Like, it's a kind of single stick, WASD only type thing. It kind of, these games kind of live and die on how satisfying, like, the visual and audio aspects are. And Deep Rock Galactic kind of, like, already has, like, does a really good job of that. Like, even pickaxing, like, some gemstones out of a wall in Deep Rock just sounds really, like, Nate will know this, like, it sounds really, like, chunky, but also, like, has a nice little twinkle to it.
Yes. It, you know, like, how really good haptic feedback on a console controller feels? It's like that for your ears.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and that translates, like, perfectly into, like, a survivor's, like, where you're just constantly, like, the guns are constantly firing and minerals are constantly out of the earth. And
in Mad Max Fury Road, where the guy, the blind guy with the Kalashnikovs, like, shouts about singing a symphony of destruction. I can't remember the quote, but he gets very excited about the sound of gunfire. And that's the exact emotion.
Oh, that's lovely.
It was a funny one because the demo sucked me in with the theme. And then, yeah, just texturally, I absolutely loved it. It's the love affair I did not expect this year, but it will be consummated in 1 hour and 1 minute on this Valentine's Day.
We will record live the noises that Nate makes. So 7 thumbs up for Deep Rock Galactic Survivor. Very good. Nate, what have you been playing? You can't say anticipating.
Well, funnily enough, getting jazzed for that made me pick up Hades again. Because although that's in no way a bullet heaven, you know, it's incremental min-maxing with WASD, so, you know, I guess it's got that in common. I have to say, I did find it quite hard to get back into and actually had to start a new run, which I hadn't expected, because it's probably been 18 months since I'd played it last, and I just... It was quite upsetting in a way, because I remember leaving it at a point where I was really invested in... I was picking up, like, little golden honey drinks to give to various gods to make them tell me their backstories, but I couldn't really remember how it all worked, so I just started again and felt kind of bummed out.
Oh no!
It's okay, in an hour I'll have a new friend.
Fucked it off and gone over to Deep Rock.
But yeah, no, it's weird. For a game that was so such a fluid dopamine deliverer at the time, I was surprised by how I just stepped into a rake, really, trying to get back in.
Mm. It does happen, I think, sometimes. You know, we grow up and we change. Just as I used to only really like sort of very sweet curries, now, you know, I like...
Have you become a rogue and Josh monster now?
No, I still have a very little baby mouth. And also, I've got Crohn's disease. So if I eat anything too hot, then I basically can't, you know, move for a day afterwards. But I now like the kind of more tomato-y, onion-y kind of stuff. You know, taste buds change and taste brains change. Yeah.
So, sorry, it's left to say that.
I've been playing a couple of things. I've been playing Grand Blue Fantasy Relink again, because it's out, it's more stable. Played a lot more. I'm writing my review up now. It's a game, it's an ARPG, well, not an ARPG, a JRPG, similar vowel sounds, that kind of does all the sort of tropes that you'd expect. So, you know, like Chosen One, Save the World, anachronistic sunglasses, cat boys, men wielding halberds the size of a house.
All the classics.
But it's very charming. It's very kind of rule of cool, basically. The combat is very... It's a game geared towards kind of, I think, playing with your mates and playing in co-op, because there's a lot of opportunities to, like, trigger, you know, attacks together. and things like that. And the combat system is the deepest thing in it. But you can still get by but just sort of not really understanding it and hammering away. And I will say, even though a million people have bought it now, I find it very hard to like matchmake. I don't know if everyone has had the same experience, but I would say probably have some friends that you play Relink with, kind of thing. But it's fun. And then I've also been playing Banishers : Ghosts of New Eden, which is Don't Nod's new game. And I've said in my review, I sort of feel, I know, don't, it's a joke. Don't explain to me that there are different creative teams within the studio. But I've said in the review, it sort of feels like Don't Nod make their like teen angst anthologies in order to fund making a kind of goth tragedy game for sort of 5 years. So they did Vampire about 5 years ago, which I enjoyed a lot of the kind of, you know, creative aspects of it, but the combat was a bit rubs. Then now they've done Banishers, and I fucking really enjoyed Banishers, lads.
What manner of really game liked is it?
So Banishers is, I've elevator pitched it as sort of like Uncharted, but you find and replace treasure with ghosts. It's a kind of swashbuckling adventure where the lead is actually, there are co-leads, and they're, in fairness, very different to the Uncharted brothers. But it's third person action adventure. It's set in like 1695 in what will be New England. And it's in an alternate version of the world where ghosts are observably real, and thus.
What do you mean alternate, Alice?
The ghost has popped up there for a second. And so banishing, like getting rid of ghosts, is a job for like freelancers. Basically, you go from town to town, and often, you know, like armies will have a banisher that travels with them to sort of stop that problem before it starts and all that kind of stuff.
So kind of like, have you seen Lockwood and Company? That kind of business.
I have not seen it, but I will assume yes. Yeah. And so these two banishers, Antea, and Red. Antea is like the very experienced banisher, and Red is like her sort of trainee, and he's working in the field. They turn up to this town, New Eden, because there's a big ghost wrecking the gaff. And then immediately, and this isn't a spoiler, it's the basis for the game, immediately Red walks into a really obvious trap, and Antea dies, and comes back as an ghost. So you then have to basically like work your, you end up quite far from New Eden, the town in the area, and you work your way back to New Eden to fight the ghost. And on the way, you deal with other ghosts and kind of bosses in the area, because there are three sort of settlements around New Eden which have major hauntings going on, and they all feed back into the main nightmare ghost. But at the same time, you also have to decide what you're going to do about Antea, because you can either try to resurrect her, or you can be like, look, when we get there, I'll banish you and let you kind of move on. And this therein is the moral choice system that Don't Nod are very fond of, because with each haunting case, you do a little investigation, and it'll be like the one they've used as an example, right? So you knock up in this hunter's camp, which is trying to survive in the forest. There's a big monster, and the local blacksmith he's disappeared. He's walked off into the forest, and his wife is like, can you figure out what's going on? And you turn up, you look through the house, and you spot the signs of like a ghost, and then you kind of find paperwork and stuff, you know, inviting him. The blacksmith is like a good Protestant to come to the new world, and then you go rescue him from some wolves, and you're like, you were doing the Hail Mary, you're not a Protestant, and all this kind of stuff, and you figure out what's actually going on. And then always at the end of every haunting, there's the option to A, blame the living person involved, and that means you murder them, basically.
Yeah.
And hoover up their life force to give to Antea. Or B, you get rid of the ghost. And there are I didn't really talk about this in my review because I kind of didn't have time, but actually the review on Polygon, which is also glowing, talks about it. And in relation to how it deals with like social issues and race and things, where you can give the ghost their ascension, which is like letting them move on peacefully and like go to implied heaven, or you can banish them, where you basically just like, you know, burn them up by grabbing their heart from the inside out, and then they go to like an endless torturous void for all eternity.
To what extent could I play and pretend it existed in the same extended continuity as BBC sitcom Ghosts?
I feel like it would be possible.
It's a very distant prequel.
So I could consider it to be one.
Yeah. But like, I almost never banished the ghosts because I sort of felt like, you know, unless someone is like, oh no, I think I'm being haunted by like Jez the nonce, like it feels a bit like it feels a bit like hardcore to like sentence a ghost to hell for eternity for, you know.
So you can be rabidly pro-ghost.
Yeah, but also the so the example that the Polygon article uses, which is a good one, and it's an example of how kind of the, I think the writing is kind of the best thing. There you go to this fort, and there's a shop in the fort, and they sell stuff. And it is owned by a black guy, and he's being haunted by the former mistress owner of the fort, and of the shop even. And you're like, what's going on? And the ghost of the lady is like, oh, we were in love and stuff. But she neglects to say that actually he was her slave and she owned him. And he didn't love her, but like he didn't have really an option to say that he didn't. And if you give her ascension, because like, you know, she was like, oh, I didn't know, I'm sorry, you know, I understand or whatever, he will be annoyed because he's like, what the fuck, quite reasonably with you.
Yeah.
Like, he will be annoyed with you. Whereas if you banish her, he'll be like, you know, he feels heard. So there are some surprising and like inventive haunting cases. There's one where like a lady is haunted by the ghost of her future self, who's sort of been sent back in time by regret, essentially. Stuff like that.
So this is in like colonial era America, right?
Yeah. It's a very new settlement. So it's North America before the USA exists.
So does it deal with Native American ghosts as well?
Not really. There are a couple of Native characters.
I'm not trying to gotcha it or anything, just like that is a hugely interesting potential direction for it,
yeah,
to go in.
They didn't really, they've sidestepped it a little bit potentially, because they've said like the Natives have long since kind of moved on, and they didn't really settle in the area because it's too spooky anyway.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, that was often the case, that like colonists lived in the areas that were literally no one else wanted.
yeah, I mean, it's possible. So, but there are some a couple of native characters in there. And then, as is the case with games like this, often like the most obvious rat bastards that you feel comfortable killing would be the ones who are most useful to the community. So, like, I don't know, this woman poisoned the baker, but if you kill her and blame her, then there will be she won't take over his job as the baker, which was her plan. So there will be no baker for the community, you know. Whereas if you help the communities out a lot, they kind of become more stable and more prosperous, and they grow, and you can go back and like the hunter's camp in the forest has become like a little town and things like that.
Is it open worldy like The Witcher, where you,
yes,
can go back to these places at will?
Yeah, yeah, it's quite a big open world as well, surprisingly big.
This sounds very good, Alice.
It's really fun. The combat's fun as well because you fight as both of them. So you fight ghosts and as Red, who's a very, like, quiet, softly spoken, quiet, but, like, very openly emotional. Like, he's a very endearing character. And then Antea is, like, she's more kind of confident and a little bit more... she's less emotional. She's more like morally black and white. They have to deal with her being dead and, you know, reckon with like the choice that they have to make at the end. And it's really engaging. It made me cry. I cried quite a lot when I was playing it.
This is a good time. How long have you finished it?
I have finished it. I spent about 40 hours doing it. Though you can get quite different endings as well. Yeah, I spent 40 hours like doing as many haunting cases and stuff as I could, because I sort of was like, I don't want these two to have to part and stuff. But you could probably do it in about 20 if you just zipped through. Because the combat is fun. You switch between them, and like Red uses his sword and whacks like ghosts. But Antea is more, she's got like special powers. So she, ghost powers. So she does like AoE crowd control stuff and is more effective against ghosts when they're possessing wolves and skeletal things and stuff. And she, like, you could switch between them at the tap of a button, so it works very well. But it's not like very hugely challenging, I would say. It's not like a Souls, like, you're not gonna get a massive challenge out of it, so you can zip through it quite quickly, I think, if you want.
And visually, what would you say it reminded you of?
I mean, visually it's quite Don't Noddy, so it's kind of dark and a bit dripping and wet and like vampire. But the pine foresty bits at the start of Life is Strange 2 and things like that, because it's the north, so it's, you know, Massachusetts area, I guess. So it's really it was great. I had a great time with it. But it is unironically about like the power of love, you know. So that's not going to gel with some people. It's very earnest about that. But I thought it was great.
I'm all into earnesty. I think that's a good time.
Good word, earnesty. I like that. James, it seems to me like it might be a good day to wear hard.
Well, Alice, how would you feel if I started talking about a USB stick?
Perplexed.
Well, it's just, there's not been much on this week except NVIDIA launched their chat with RTX chatbot, which works on like gaming graphics cards, but I can't bring myself to be interested in that or talk about that.
Tell me about the stick, James.
Well,
I'm intrigued.
Well, I just thought it was funny. It's called the Overdriver USB. That's Overdriver without the first E. It's just fulfilled its crowdfunding goal on crowdsupply.com. And it's the most wonderfully yet questionably Mission Impossible USB stick I've ever seen. Because, one, to actually read the data on it, you have to do a secret Masonic handshake thing by very quickly inserting and removing and inserting it into your PC 3 times in a row. And that's the only way. That's the only way you can access the data on. So anyone who steals it, say, will naturally just put it in once. Nothing happens. No one thinks it's broken. So, you know, it's safe. But the real party piece is that at your command, you can have it invert the voltage supply, which raises the internal temperature to 100 degrees Celsius, destroying it.
What? This is the most sinister device. You have to fuck your computer with it to access it. And then... Oh, I don't. Who's this for?
I think it's you know, privacy nerds who think they'll have their identity stolen if someone steals their Elden Ring backup saves.
I guess. I mean, is it very cheap?
No, it's like $69 for an 8 gigabyte model. Which is actually, I'm fairly sure I've stolen 8 gigabyte USBs from stands at conventions.
For that price, I would want the interior to have some weed in it. So at least when you combust it, you can at least smoke your data.
I think in a way it's cool. It's weird, but it's cool. I admittedly don't have anything. I don't personally keep anything on USB drives that I'd be willing to immolate my own hardware to protect. it's all like Windows installers, my old university Word documents. But I do wonder though, if the method for inducing the self-destruct is so simple technologically, could it be applied to other circuitry based hardware products? Maybe not as a data protection measure, but you could use it as parental controls. So if you don't want your kid playing Poppy Playtime for more than an hour ago, you could say, all right, well, if you don't go off, I'm going to raise the temperature of your laptop And then you press a button and it goes to like 80, 85, 90. This is the last chance. Until they either acquiesce or it detonates in their hands.
Or a VR game where you're like, you're in an escape pod in a space battle and like it's plunging into a planetary atmosphere, but the coolant system isn't working. And you've got to, it's like an escape room where you've got to flail with cables and like get various sort of incomprehensible diegetic instruments in alignment, or your computer just fucking slags itself. And like you would see it like flickering and shutting down from within the game. And smell the smoke. Like for millionaires, that would be very cool.
Yeah, because that's some Elon bait.
If you can't do you die in the game, you die in real life, then I guess yeah, you die in the game, your computer explodes would be the next best thing.
It's pretty cool.
It is pretty. Although I feel like the Venn diagram of people who think they need it and people who actually need it wouldn't overlap that much, possibly. Mm.
Who would need it?
I don't know.
Government people?
Actual spies, yeah.
James Groms.
James Groms.
So he puts all his nudes. They're all like 80 gigabyte JPEGs because he's so big.
Let's quickly go now to the Tower of Jocularity. Nate, how's the tower looking?
It's spick and span, actually. Well, I say that. It's rammed with very silly animals. Some of them are quite threatening, actually. I'm not going to lie. And I don't know what franchise they've come from. Half of the animals in here are Pals from the game Pal World. The other are things that I've manifested, or my unconscious has manifested and named. So I'm going to... What would you like me to do? Would you like me to introduce them to you one by one and you can try and sniff out the fakes? Or would you like to...
We can identify whether they're a genuine pal.
Yeah. Do you want me to describe the whole group and you can look at them? Which one do you want to do? Do you want to take you through the whole set, yeah?
Can we do the whole set and then maybe we can ask them to step forward and we'll... You know, give them some extra questioning.
Yeah, sure, yeah. So you've got, and just to give you a little window into my process here, all I've got in each instance is the name and a picture. So whether it's real or fake, I'll have to be on my toes.
Okay.
So we've got this sort of lumpen... So elephant-looking thing dragging a club called a tape ogre. We've got kind of what I can only describe as Johnny Sins playing Pikachu called Grisbolt. There's a very vacant-looking tall teal sort of sauropod called Relaxaurus. A regal insect called Elizabeth. What appears to be a hippo with rotating teeth called Ripotamus.
Okay.
There's a sort of shamanistic looking cloaked sheep or goat thing called Goatesque, so I'm going to guess goat. Two cephalopods now. You've got a sort of long orange octopus with a number of guns called Gloctopus. And you've got Killamari, which seems to be a sort of melee-oriented squid. Then you've got a furtive... is this like a pair of sneaky eyes peering out of a spiral shell called Scammonite?
Okay.
And then a wise-looking owl called Hookrates. And that's the menagerie. So which of these five fuckers can I banish back to Pal World?
Okay, sorry, can we go... Gloctopus... and Killamari separate, or are they being treated as one?
They are separate. They worry me because they've got a very similar theme.
Yeah, okay.
I think Gloctopus is a Nate construct.
Yeah, can we get rid of Gloctopus right now?
Yeah, Gloctopus is one of mine. Congrats.
I know Power World likes to play the legally distinct thing quite close to the line. I don't think they'd have an actual brand name of a weapons manufacturer.
Yeah, because they'd have to fucking pay for it. You can only do that if you're Call of Duty. Okay.
Good, excellent sleuthing.
I feel like I've seen the word Hookrates in a Power World guide.
Really? Because I was on the basis that that is also a terrible pun. I was like, that feels Nate-flavoured.
It's not even a pun, that's why I like it so much. It's just the noise an owl makes in a philosopher.
I think that's a pal. Is that a pal?
It's a pal, yeah.
Oh, I'm missing some of the... Can we go to the start again?
Yeah, yeah. So there's the lumbering, trunk-snouted tape ogre.
Yeah.
You've got the horrible, smiled, sort of ripped Pikachu Grizzbolt.
I think Grizzbolt is real because I think he was quite front and center with the marketing, wasn't he? James, do you have a memory of it?
Is it like the big yellow one that's always wielding a minigun?
Yeah.
I think that
also,
might be.
By the way, revealing a lot about ourselves that when Nate said a sort of Johnny Sins, that none of us were like, who's Johnny Sins?
Well, you got him. He is indeed a pal.
Okay, good. Okay.
So you're 3 for 3 so far. Good job.
And then there was a regal bee.
Yeah, called Elizabeth.
Now that's quite a good pun. Not even a pun, as you say, but like...
Does it resemble the late, rest of the soul, Elizabeth II?
I would honestly say more Elizabeth I, actually.
Okay.
In what way? What are we basing this on?
Sure. It's got kind of, if you'll forgive, a beehive hairdo, I think. I'm looking at quite a small JPEG here. Definitely sort of, it's ginger-coded, I would say.
Ginger-coded? Okay.
I think that might be a pal.
Can we put a question mark in? Because I want to ask about the lumpen, the first guy. What was his name?
Tape ogre.
Like a cross between a tapir and an ogre, is that the...
Yes, a Malayan tapir by the look of it, because it's black and white. You know how they look kind of like a cross between a pig and a nappy and a Battenberg cake?
Yeah.
It's got that kind of colour scheme. And like two little Cyril Sneer ears on top of its head.
I'm not sure about that because Nate likes ogres.
I do love ogres. It's true. I quite like tapirs too.
I'm honestly not sure. Like the way he described it made me think it was maybe a bit too similar to a mammoth looking pal that I know actually is in the game.
Also, that's Ripotamus starting up over there.
I think Ripotamus is a Nate one.
I think Tape Ogre is fake, and I think Nate is desperately trying to make us move on to something else. So
okay,
we're making noises.
Okay, should we go tape over? Fake tapo, yeah. Tapo?
Kick tapo in the
bin. Me so well. yeah. Tape ogre's one of mine. Okay, so that leaves you with Relaxaurus, Elizabeth, Ripotamus, Gotesque, Killamari, and Scammonite.
I think Gotesque is too shit a pun even for Power World.
Really? A bit of a goat.
Pretty good.
What, you would think it was pretty good because you invented it.
Do you think Elizabeth is real, James?
Elizabeth could go either way. I think Killamari is a pal.
Okay, let's say Killamari is a pal. But
based on a pure hunch.
You're correct. You got it. Yeah, that's nice. A pal.
Yeah.
Well, you're halfway through. I'm impressed.
Okay, let's say Elizabeth is a pal. Elizabeth is a pal.
It is!
Oh, wow.
Okay.
We're doing all right. So who's left? Who's left?
So out of the following four, one of these is a pal. Relaxaurus, Ripotamus, Gotesque, and Scammonite.
I think you're right in that Gotesque is made up because that's sort of that's several levels of pun.
I initially thought it might be Ripotamus because I don't know if Nate would be bothered to look up the actual, calls of Power World pals. before he did an impression of one. Although maybe he's just making that up, so making that individual quality up to throw us off.
Can I ask you to describe Goatesque, Nate?
Yeah, it's like, it's not clear whether it's a sheep or a goat, but it's that sort of long face with a bit of fluff at the top. It's got like a blue robe and tentacles coming out where the arms should.
Okay, that's bollocks. That's fake. That's
what?
Just kept adding shit. You can't just be like, Alice got tentacles.
Laser guns in a force field.
Okay, Goatesque's one of mine.
Yeah.
It goes to school in Canada, does it? Okay. All right, you've got a 1 in 3 chance. Okay. Tell me about Relaxaurus.
So it's just kind of a dim-looking, teal-coloured sauropod. It's got some flowers kind of growing out of it. It might be nature-type pal. I don't know. I don't know anything about pals.
Okay. So from this, we know...
I can tell you it's not Depresso, by the way. There is a pal called Depresso, who I love.
Relaxaurus. Okay.
I think that could be a pal.
Oh, that could be a pal. Okay, tell me about Scammonite.
So it's just, you know, like an ammonite shell?
Yeah.
It's like one of those with like a little purple bandana around the opening and a couple of sneaky eyes, like in Shadow.
And Rippopotamus?
So it's kind of a big purple hippopotamus with a 1,000-yard stare and like little jagged teeth.
In what way does it have a 1,000-yard stare?
Its pupils aren't kind of aligned. It looks like it's looking through you.
Okay, and what, is it holding anything, or like what?
No, it's just sort of bursting out of the dark.
Okay, so why did you make a sort of chainsaw noise earlier when you were trying to distract us, Nate?
Because the teeth spin round.
Okay, all right. Okay, so I'm saying...
Sorry, update on Relaxaurus.
You're doing it again! Rippopotamus is fake! Rippopotamus is fake!
Rippopotamus is fake. I was just going to say, Relaxaurus just appears to have sort of dark bands on it rather than plants.
Okay. Can I ask how much you know about Pokemon? Did you play it, or did you just do a bit of Pokemon Snap when that was popular?
I played Red and Blue way back in the day.
Okay. Describe to me Scammonite again.
So it's like an ammonite shell.
Yeah.
But it's got like a purple bandana or a headscarf around like the opening. And the opening's dark inside, but there's these two little like sneaky purple eyes like looking out.
It's a tough one. It is a tough one. So the concept is like it's an untrustworthy fossil.
I don't know what the lore is behind it. My personal headcanon, based on the name and the picture, is that it's something else living in an ammonite shell. So it's not an ammonite, I guess.
Okay.
Or it could just be an untrustworthy mollusk. Like I said, I wish I wrote the backstory to these things. And looking at the Relaxaurus, actually describing it as a sauropod, it's got more the posture of an obese therizinosaurusine. Therizinosaurus.
Okay, I don't know what that is.
It's the guy with the big hands from the last Jurassic Park film.
Okay.
I'm inclined to go for this one as a fake one just because Nate likes his dinosaurs.
I do.
He does like his dinosaurs.
He can confound us with his superior dinosaur knowledge.
That's true.
What's it going to be? Is it going to be... Relaxaurus or Scammonite? Notice we've ended up in the dregs of paleontology here, either way.
Yeah. I know that we've done really well up until now, but I feel like this is how we either win or lose here, you know?
Yeah. It's all or nothing. The winner takes it all.
Oh.
I think Relaxaurus is fake.
I was leaning Scammonite.
This is one of the best towers ever.
Yeah. Well,
who's your pal?
I was questioning him so closely on Scammonite, but I'll go with you, James. We'll go with Relaxaurus.
Okay. Have you played Pal World, Alice?
No, not at all. No.
Okay, I've played like a couple of hours.
Okay, well, so yeah,
I don't claim like specialist knowledge.
Do you remember seeing like a sort of blue dinosaur?
No, none at all.
You drive the sacred alga into Relaxaurus's skull. Only pixels bleed forth, for the Relaxaurus was a real pal.
Oh no.
Behind you, oh, no. Scammonite gives a pathetic chuckle. Swipes up your belongings and identities before he can reverse the voltage and incinerate them on your memory sticks. I'm afraid your identities belong to Scammonite now and thus to me. Please leave the tower.
Okay, oh no.
That's my bad.
Thank you, Nate, for stealing our identities. I can no longer say I'm Alice Bell. I'm just a person. And that is the end of this week's episode of the Electronic Wireless Show podcast, season 3, episode 6. And all that remains now is for some recommendations, because every week we recommend something that isn't a video game. So, James, what are you recommending this week?
I'm recommending the Netflix K-drama, A Killer Paradox. Maybe specifically the first half of it. It kind of goes off the rails a bit, but it's quite interesting and visually like very well shot. It's about a guy in Korea who sort of accidentally murders a couple of people, and it turns out that they themselves were murderers. And then he thinks, oh, actually, maybe I should keep going with this.
As you would, yeah.
Yeah.
Do you like your K-dramas?
Not really, no. I say that like I think they're all crap. No, I don't seek them out. It's just, I don't know,
okay.
whenever something pops up, or if my fiancé wants to watch something, then we will. But...
No, just because Ashley feasts on K-dramas, so I end up osmosing a fair amount of knowledge about what the decent ones are if you wanted further recommendations.
Okay.
Yeah, let me ever know if you want to walk further into that dark cave.
Should you watch Subs or Dubs?
I don't know what she's watching at the moment, actually. A lot of it seems to involve foxes masquerading as men and goblins. But they're not goblins, they're more handsome men.
They're handsome men masquerading as men.
Just oceans of
dastards.
Very slightly mythological twinks. It's great.
I'm going to recommend a newsletter called Today in Tabs. I'm increasingly consuming the internet via newsletters, so I don't have to do any work. Today in Tabs is one such. It just collects loads of links to stuff that's happening. It's principally the United States stuff, but links to articles and stuff and things going on. And I find it interesting, and I don't always agree with all the specifics of everything it kind of says, but it's generally, you know, left-leaning, socialist-y, but also sort of like online millennially. So it will sort of explain if there's stuff trending on Twitter and being referenced and you kind of don't get what's happening, it will know what is happening, which is good and useful. Today in Tabs, I will link to the sign up in the show notes. Nate, what are you going to recommend this week?
The works of Sergei Rachmaninoff. Just been listening to a bunch of Russian classical music recently, been on a big one with Mussorgsky. And now, been listening to a load of Rachmaninoff this week. And it's great writing music. A lot of it's quite heavy, actually. Weirdly, it pleases me as someone who enjoys metal while having quite a lot of, calm piano bits as well. I'm no good talking about music, but it's good. Listen.
The vibes are good.
Yeah, the vibes are just cracking.
Lovely. Thank you, gang. And thank you, listener, for joining us for this episode of the Electronic Wireless Show, Rock Paper Shotgun's PC gaming podcast, and the only podcast you need, in my opinion. You can find Rock Paper Shotgun on all of the social medias, living and dead, and you can email us podcast@rockpapershotgun.com. And you can also join the Discord, the Rock Paper Shotgun Discord. The link is in the show notes. There's a room for talking about the podcast, but there's also a place for just hanging out, talking about games, finding games to play with people. It's all great. And of course, for all your PC gaming needs, just go to www.rockpapershotgun.com. But for now, it is goodbye from me, Alice Bell. Oh, I'm not Alice Bell anymore. It's goodbye from me, and it's goodbye from that other guy.
Well.
And me, Alice Bell.